You pressed play on this podcast with the click of curiosity. It is another dimension, a dimension of mind, a dimension where nothing is sacred and everything is explainable. You're streaming into a land of both inside and outside, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the midside.
Welcome to the midside, where sometimes you just have to talk to your friend, Wilson. If you enjoy your trip to the midside, please tell a friend. Referrals are our number one source of tourism. And if you really like the work of your tour guides, head over to Patreon, patreon.com/themidside, and tip us. And of course I say us, but joining me this week is no one. Everyone had an excuse. They had to be out there making money. So I'm going to do this one Bill Burr style. I'm not going to have a ridiculous intro like he has. I'm not going to do ridiculous voices like he does, mainly because I can't do them and I would sound like a jackass, but that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to do this one all by my lonesome. And it's a little bit of a weird experience. I was thinking about for a while, what should I say, and sort of try to plan out what I wanted to say, but I kind of want this episode to go like half an hour to 45 minutes, and it seems ridiculous to plan out everything that I'm going to say. I mean, how sort of anal and, I don't know, it seems like lacking a certain self-confidence to want to do everything planned out. I mean, I think that was the weakest part of my vlog. If anyone out there saw my vlog for the first episode of the Midside Moment where I talked about all the noise in the internet, I think I came across poorly because everything was written out. It was like dialogue, and I was like an actor trying to deliver dialogue, and I'm not an actor. There's no way I'm an actor. If I was an actor, I would be, you know, living a much different lifestyle right now. I'm far too much of a control freak, and I'm far too worried about what my words are to be an actor. So I tried to plan this out. I couldn't. It seemed very silly to me, so I'm sort of just sort of talk and ramble, and you get a nice look into the inside of my brain right now. So when we're talking about going into the midside, you're really, really, really going into the midside this week because you're going right inside of my brain. And in that sense, I do have a little bit of an outline. So let's start with the place the midside always is in the fall and what we don't talk about very often on the show because a lot of our audience doesn't like it. Actually, I believe there's a iTunes review out there from Mark where he says he's able to put up with the football talk because of all the other great material. Well, Mark, we're going to start with some football talk, especially because I'm recording this on Sunday afternoon. And you know what that means? The Patriots just played this morning. And man, holy shit, that turned into a game. Although I say it turned into a game, it didn't really. It really turned into two teams sort of trying to play some semblance of football, although they're not the worst. South Carolina State was the worst this week. If anyone saw that game, one of Clemson's touchdowns against them was a kickoff. They kicked the ball off to South Carolina State, and then the returner thought he could call a fair catch on a kickoff. Of course, you can't, and so he didn't kneel the ball, and he threw it to the ref, and the ref, of course, didn't even try and catch it. He just let it fall to the ground. The Clemson players ran down. The Clemson coverage team ran down, tackled the receiver, the kick receiver, and recovered the ball for a touchdown. It's one of the most ridiculous touchdowns I've ever seen scored. But the second half of the Patriots game sort of resembled that because, as if they didn't have anything else to fucking deal with, Jimmy Garoppolo got hurt. So after winning in Arizona when nobody expected them to do anything, Jimmy Garoppolo came out and he threw for almost 300 yards and three touchdowns in about a quarter and a few minutes. So this is a guy, this is top of the line NFL play right now. He looked spectacular. I mean, the way he was distributing the ball, he threw to like five different receivers at one point. Martellus Bennett scored a touchdown. Amendola scored a couple. Edelman was catching the ball. No passes really looked like they'd be interception. I mean, this was a guy who we were literally, I was sitting next to a couple other Patriots fans at the bar. We were already legitimately talking about, what are you going to do with this guy? His contract runs out in 2017. Brady's through, his contract's through in 2019. This guy's a legitimate NFL starter, though we know Matt Castle looked like that when he played for the Patriots. So what are you going to do? You can't pay him all sorts of money when his contract runs out, because you can't have that much money invested in two players, especially when one's not really playing. My whole thing is you got to figure out a way to sweet talk him and say, okay, you know Brady's not going to play very much longer. We're going to re-sign you, but we're going to give you a big signing bonus and then backload your contract. So basically, we're only playing you when you're starting. That's the best way I can see having it happen. But other guys, they're talking about franchising Garoppolo for a year, which would cost a fuckload of money. It's just, it's a very interesting situation because we'd all like to believe Tom Brady is immortal. We'd all like to believe that. You know, just like John Galt invented the static motor, and that's science fiction, we'd all like to believe Tom Brady invented immortality and will play forever or go on strike and play football in the Gulch and just hang out with Giselle. That's what we would like to believe. But he's not going to, so you need to have a succession plan in place. And if the succession plan is Jimmy Garoppolo, if he's that good and he's that also, you know, unique of a talent, how do you just let him walk because you have 2 years left on Brady? But at the same time, how do you trade Tom Brady? How heartbreaking would it be to see Tom Brady in another uniform? I personally couldn't stand it, and I don't know if Robert Kraft could stand it either, and I don't know if Bill Belichick could stand it. Belichick's probably the one who could stand it the most if you're looking at the long-term future of the team. But it still seems, if somebody's the greatest quarterback ever and they've given you that many years, you owe them some sort of loyalty. Regardless, you know, regardless of Wes Welker in the crowd wearing a fake Brady shirt, looking very haggard, by the way, regardless of Tom Brady out there with Giselle somewhere at Michigan on Saturday night, Midsider William texted me some stuff, Snapchatted me some stuff of him being honored when William was watching the game. You know, regardless of all of that, Jimmy Garoppolo played great for a quarter and a couple minutes. Then took a hard hit where his shoulder was driven into the ground. And immediately tried to get up, tried to walk away, but he couldn't. He was in so much pain. So, of course, having seen Tony Romo break his clavicle, break his collarbone so many times, break his back, my immediate thought is he's out. He's out not just for the game, but for the season. Because you figure if he can't play for extended time, you know, a couple months, you just put him on IR because Brady's coming back and now we have two more games till Brady comes back. Then you know, open up the roster spot, sign a backup, cut him after 2 weeks to have the roster spot for Brady. So I'm sitting here thinking, Jesus fucking Christ, like, is this really happening right now? Like, we're up 21-0, and then Jimmy G had driven us far enough that we kicked another field goal, and we went up 24-0. But now we've got our third-string quarterback in, Jacoby Brissett, who was starting in the ACC last season. And probably nobody noticed him because he was, you know, didn't get as much hype as Deshaun Watson. But here's a guy who, this is a legitimate rookie. Didn't get that much practice in preseason. And now he's out there playing. And it's just before the half. Can we really hold on to a 24-point lead that Garoppolo spotted us? So the Dolphins then score before halftime. And they're getting the ball to start that second half. This is just not looking good at all. And then Belichick went into vintage Belichick. And this is something that I identified years ago. And I think I told Daniel about it. And Daniel actually quoted it back to me, which is something I absolutely enjoy. When someone quotes myself back at me, that's great. He went into what I call the clock-killing defense, and this is one of the most brilliant things I've ever seen. It's the rules now favor the offense, so why not let them move the ball and essentially trade points for time? So we were able to stop Miami on the first drive, and then LeGarrette Blount scored a touchdown on the second drive. But on that first drive, or on our first drive, which was the second drive of the game, the half, Brissett didn't look too good. So Belichick knew that we wouldn't be able to move the ball very well. Fortunately, LeGarrette Blount ran for over 127 yards in the touchdown I just mentioned in the game, so that was helpful. But he knew that, so when Miami had the ball, he let them move it and score, you know, we ideally wouldn't have liked them to have scored all the touchdowns they did. We would have preferred to trade time for field goals, but it is what it is. So that as they scored, it took a lot of time off the clock because everything's in the middle of the field and not long plays. Of course, you know, Miami did a little better than we would have liked. When you do that kind of strategy, you want to keep them to, you know, 5 to 7 yard plays. You don't want these 15 to 20 yard plays, but it's going to happen when you're playing soft like that. So it got all the way to the end of the fourth quarter, and it got a little sketchy, where the Patriots had it under 2 minutes, 39-yard field goal, and Gostkowski misses. He never misses. He missed. I guess that makes up for the Arizona miss, and I'm glad we got it out of the way. So with about a minute and a half left and 71 yards to go, the Dolphins got the ball, and they were unable to finish the drive. They got all the way down to like the Patriots 30, 35 and threw an interception. Harmon intercepted the ball in the end zone. And thankfully we escaped and we're now 2-0. It's a huge relief to have gotten out of that game. And then it came out after the game that Garoppolo doesn't have a broken bone. So maybe he will help play on Thursday, although I doubt it because now we have a quick turnaround, which is going to make Thursday's game even tighter, even closer, even tougher. A short week to prepare with a rookie quarterback who hasn't gotten a lot of first-team reps. We're asking a lot of the Patriots. Granted, the game is in New England, but it's against the Texans, who have a great defense. I think that Belichick will be able to stop Osweiler and the Houston offense, so I expect a low-scoring game. We'll see what happens. But it's just insane what this team was able to overcome, and the fact that they're 2-0, even if we're 2-2 when Brady comes back, that's a great position. If you remember the last time we won the Super Bowl, the last time the Patriots won the Super Bowl, they were 2-2 after that first month, and the second loss was right at the end of the month when they got destroyed by Kansas City, so they've come back from much worse. I mean, it sucks to see Garoppolo get hurt, and it sucks the most for him. It's just like the second he got hurt, it's like you could see the millions of dollars disappearing from his bank account in the future. Because once you get hurt like that, especially a quarterback on his throwing shoulder, that takes away all the potential that he could have. You don't know what the ceiling is anymore because an injury like that can hold him back. Especially, I think Daniel was telling me after the game that statistically, once you get hurt the first time, it's easier to get hurt the second time. And then if you get hurt the second time, it's like you're basically screwed. I mean, that's Tony Romo at this point, right? How many more times is he going to break a bone before people just say, fucking retire, dude. Just sit down. You're going to kill yourself at this point. How long until you snap your neck? So, you know, it sucks for the Patriots that Garoppolo got hurt. We might not go 4-0 now. Although I think it would be especially ironic if we went 3-1, but the one loss was to the Texans rather than the Cardinals. You know, because I thought we were going to go 3-1 and lose to the Cardinals. And it looked like we were going to go 4-0 after last week, and especially after the first quarter this week. So if we go 3-1, because I think we can beat the Bills no matter what, because they're just sort of tragic, you know. The most tragic franchise may be the Browns, but the Bills are kind of right up there with them, especially with now Rex Ryan and everything that just happened on Thursday night this week. If you follow me on Snapchat, you saw my ranting about the awful play calling with about 7 minutes left in the fourth quarter in that game. So, you know, it sucks for us that we might not go 4-0. It sucks for the team. It sucks for the fans. But it sucks the most for Jimmy G. You gotta feel for that guy. How much money was he making? Like, every time he threw another touchdown pass, it was just like, how many more millions of dollars is that for him? And then he gets hurt like that? And, you know, if it's, you know, thankfully it's not a broken bone or anything, but what is it with a shoulder? Is it a separated shoulder? Is it a jammed shoulder? Is it a torn rotator cuff? Any injury it could be, the more severe it is, the more that's going to drop his value in the free agency. I mean, again, that might be good for the Patriots because they can sign him for cheaper after his rookie contract's over because they're taking the risk and other people don't want to take that risk. But you have to feel bad for Jimmy Garoppolo. But you know who I don't feel bad for? Roger Goodell. I don't know if I'm the only one out there. I'm sure I'm not. I don't know why I would be so presumptuous to say that. But I picture his reactions to things during the game. Like when the Patriots beat the Cardinals last week, I was like, wow. What the fuck is Roger Goodell thinking like now? Like, is he just throwing over tables? He's just so fucking pissed, like that that girl on the Real Housewives of New York or whatever that was, just tossing over tables when the Patriots won that game. And then this week, I have to believe a part of him, when Jimmy G got hurt, when Garoppolo took that hit to the shoulder, when he got driven in the ground like that, part of me has to think that he was excited about that. But then to see the Patriots win any day, how about that for a Freudian slip? Yeah, the Patriots win any day. Probably, I don't know, like, fucking, I still want 16-0. But I have to believe that Goodell was pissed at the end of the game. I mean, it's blatantly an attempt to tear the Patriots down and to stop them from winning and to add parity. But the Bills and the Dolphins are still, even with Brady being suspended and Garoppolo hurt, they're still two games behind the division lead already. We almost have a stranglehold on the division two games into the season. That is insane. It's pure insanity. See, I think this is the part I have the hardest time with, is the transitioning. Like, I listen to Bill Burr's podcast, and I can't even picture how he transitions between random subject matter. It just seems like he's like, I'm going to talk about this now, blah, blah, blah. And that was the worst Bill Burr impression ever. But you get the point I'm making. So I don't really know how to transition, so I'm just going to say I'm going to talk about something else now. And the next thing I want to talk about is something we were going to talk about on the regular episode. And this was on the regular outline I had. And this is the iOS update. If anyone out there is an iPhone user, are you as fucking confused as I am? Like, I hate updating the iOS because every time I do, it makes me feel like I'm about 80 fucking years old because I never know what the fuck is going on. So the main change to this operating system seems to be the messaging software. And last night I was texting and just fucking, I get a text back and all of a sudden, like, there are balloons in the background. Then there are fireworks. And I'm like, what the fuck is going on? Then I turn my phone sideways and all of a sudden I can write. Like, are we just supposed to figure these features out by experimentation? And, like, now I have to figure out a whole new modality of communication? Like, I just figured out how to use emojis. I don't remember if we mentioned it on the show, but there was a study that was done that said that if you use proper grammar and proper punctuation in texting, people find it off-putting and less human, which is bizarre to me because we created the rules of communication to make human communication clear. It's a whole other discussion. But I finally figured out how to integrate emojis in a way that made sense and fit my personality and everything, and I use animated GIFs sometimes. But now I got to figure out these fucking balloons and lasers and fireworks, and what fucking purpose could that ever have? Like, there's one person who, no matter whose birthday it is, and I unfriended this person, will post a picture of balloons on their Facebook when it's their birthday, when they say happy birthday. Is that the purpose of the balloons? Is it just whenever you send a happy birthday text to someone with an iPhone? That makes me wonder another question, the handwriting. So you can turn the phone horizontally, or I don't know how the fuck you say it, whatever. I guess it's horizontally, and you can write on it. Because that writing only show up if you have an iPhone? I need to fucking do that. Let me fucking do this right now. Fuck, I'm going to fucking text someone who doesn't have an iPhone or has an old iOS. Who do I know that doesn't have a fucking iPhone? I guess that answers my goddamn question. I don't even know. I'm looking at all these fucking people, and I'm pretty sure they have an iPhone. Yeah, and these other people, I don't even know what kind of phones they have. So it's either friends who I'm really close with on my text right now, and I know they have an iPhone, or people I don't really know very well, so I don't know if they have an iPhone or not. So I don't think my mom updated her iOS because, you know, she's old. So I'm going to send a handwriting text to her and see if that works. I think it just sends it as a picture. I think it just worked. I mean, I just sent it to her. I don't know if she can see it or not, but we'll see if she texts me back to see if she can see that. It says handwritten message, the same thing you're sending to someone on iOS 10, but I think it might have just sent it as a picture. We'll see. That'll be interesting if that goes through or not. But that's the point. I still don't know all the functionality of this shit, right? So I was trying to figure that out last night, And then, of course, the main thing here culturally is what they did with the emojis. So they actually removed the pistol, the handgun. I think it was a revolver. I don't remember. I don't remember what it looked like. I'm not up on my gun types. I think it might have been a revolver, though, or just a pistol. And they made that a green squirt gun. You know, one of those shitty ones from the 99-cent store or the dollar store that you used as a kid, and you're like, why can't I just have a fucking super soaker, Mom? Yeah, one of those, and it always leaked, and it, you know, you had to refill it after, like, two shots. They changed it to one of those. Like, what are you accomplishing? Like, is this helping guns not be as pervasive in the culture because you can't text with that? Is this getting kids not used to guns? Like, I don't understand what you're doing besides pandering to social justice people, to social justice warriors. What is the point of taking away the gun? I don't understand it. Maybe somebody out there can explain it to me. It makes no sense to me. Especially when you have things like the knives still there, the swords there, as if you can't kill people with knives and swords. If you're going to get rid of weapons, get rid of them altogether. The one that surprises me the most is, you know what's still there? The fucking bomb. At least make it blue and claim it's a Legend of Zelda bomb. Like, why is there a black bomb there? Like, we can't have a gun, but we can have an explosive? None of this shit makes any fucking sense to me. And why are you designing your product for the minority? I can't believe there were that many people that were upset with the gun emoji. Like, were people getting it and they were that fucking angry about it? Like, I don't understand. And at the same time, part of the reason they can get away with it is, I don't really give a fuck. I never use the gun emoji. That's the point. People were mad at it when they weren't using it. I know I wasn't using it. So, I don't really, honestly, like, as far as a day-to-day pragmatic thing, it doesn't matter to me if they get rid of the gun emoji. I don't care. It doesn't affect my life on a daily basis. I won't even use the squirt gun. I mean, I might use it to make fun of the fact that it's not the real gun now. I'll probably use that emoji more now than I did before. So, like, that's why they can get away with stuff like this, because most of us don't give a shit. We have bigger things to worry about. But from a cultural standpoint, it's interesting to me that this is what they're worried about. You know, there, like I said, I mentioned some of the innovative stuff that they did with the messaging and everything, and I'm sure there are probably other things that with this iOS that I haven't discovered yet. Like when I was watching the game today, I kept raising my phone and it kept unlocking. And Daniel told me that was a thing about, like, it's like raised to unlock or some shit. I don't know. He told me how to turn it off and said it was a energy suck. I don't know. Whatever. But I didn't know about that. I was just like, why the fuck is my phone doing this? I thought I was going crazy. It was my first. Tells you about me. My first fucking thought is to doubt myself. The phone's doing something weird. I'm like, what did I do? Am I crazy? Am I hallucinating? I assume I fucked up somehow. But yeah, so, you know, there are some cool updates in this and some innovative things. But at the same time, why are they so fucking worried about the gun emoji? I don't understand. And that's what I'm saying. From a cultural standpoint, it's interesting that those are the things we're focused on, right? This is the same thing, like, we're so focused on the gender of the Ghostbusters, right? What the fuck? Like, why are we so worried about that? Why is that such an issue that we're using it to drive ticket sales or to make a movie? You know, there's an argument here about marketing and people having this slave mentality and just, you know, the lowest common denominator or sheep or whatever word you want to use, and just sort of, this is how we cull people. This is how we, you know, herd them type idea. I mean, I get that. This is how we placate them, the opiate of the masses. There's all sorts of arguments like that to be made. I just think it's interesting that these are the ways we're going about it. And these are the things we're acting like we're achieved and we're caring. So maybe share your thoughts about that on Twitter. Maybe Motive Power. Tell me what you think about that. Maybe James, you can tune in next week. This wasn't supposed to be your episode anyway. Maybe you can share your thoughts on that next week, or share it on the Facebook page. People out there, tell me what you think, you know, the significance of this is and why we're focused on such small things. Because that's the question I would ask Daniel and James and Elliot if they were on the show with me this week. Why are we focused on minutia with things like that. Like, the gun emoji seems ultimately insignificant. It's like when they replaced the guns with walkie-talkies in E.T. It's sort of like, why are we focused on shit like that? It just to me seems like there's so many more important things to focus on. Of course, I say that and now I'm going to talk for the rest of the show about fucking entertainment and TV shows. So the first thing I want to talk about is apparently the first episode of Son of Zorn was released on Hulu. So I watched it. And I watched it because the first thing is it's executive produced or produced in some capacity by Phil Lord and Christopher Miller. We know they're great writers. We know they're great comedic writers. You know, they've done some great stuff. They did, obviously, the Lego movie was their big thing. They did 21 and 22 Jump Street. So they've done some really great stuff. Their TV stuff hasn't been as great. I'm talking about The Last Man on Earth. Really can't stand that show. I don't think it's funny at all. Some people love it. It has a great cast. I mean, Will Forte, Christian Schaal, those are great comedic actors. That's a great comedic actor and a great comedic actress. So, you know, they still know what they're doing from a production standpoint, even if the material isn't great. And this show has an interesting twist to it, right? It's about the He-Man type character who's animated coming back to live in Orange County and take care of his son. That's why it's called The Son of Zorn. His son is like 16, 17. I don't remember the exact age. And it's about him trying to integrate into their life. So it's basically a fish out of water story, with the twist of it being the cartoon He-Man character who is almost a statement on what people see as masculinity. He's this very barbaric, brutal character. He doesn't worry about what he's saying to other people. He kills a giant bird in front of his family and everyone's grossed out by it. So actually, you could argue, and I'm not sure if I would, but it would be interesting if a more MRA person tried to critique this from that standpoint. I'm not sure if I would, but it's an interesting question to raise about it. But that's not even the problem with the show. I didn't even have that. I didn't even find that grating at all, that problem. I didn't have that problem. The show, although, like I said, it's well produced, it's got a great cast in it. Jason Sudeikis voices Zorn. Cheryl Hines plays his wife. The kid who was on Superstore, he played like the wannabe white rapper Wigger character on Superstore. He plays the son. So it's a great cast. And there's one other cast member that I'm not mentioning because he's the only good part of the show. You know, these are all good actors. They're talented. They give decent performances. It's just that the material they have isn't very good. Like, I just don't care about the situation or anything, and most of the jokes were not funny. So, overall, I would give this show a 3 out of 10. Now, why am I giving it a 3 besides production value? And I know that, you know, Daniel has that problem, and some of you listeners probably do as well, that I give some points for production value. To me, that's important. To me, being able to execute on a professional level says something. And this show is very well executed on a professional level. It looks good. There were some weird shots where you could tell they shot one shots with the actor who's supposed to, actor or actress who's supposed to be talking to Zorn, the cartoon. And you can tell they shot it that way so they weren't together in the same frame so it didn't look weird. But that actually made it look weird in a reverse way. So there are production challenges to this. Although I wonder how much they rely on something like Who Framed Roger Rabbit to answer those production challenges. So there are production challenges there. But forgot where I was going with that. But yeah, there are production challenges. That's not the weak. I'm not sure that I would say that that's the weakest part of the show. They're not that noticeable. I think maybe an average viewer might not notice them. The strength of the show, though, is the other character. So Zorn is coming back after having gone to the island of Zootheria, I think it was called. The fact that I fucking know that. And I'm going to talk about Black Panther here in a minute. I think he's from Wakanda, or I don't even know that. So I can name Zootheria, but not Wakanda. What the fuck are these names? Like, who the fuck comes up with these names? Like, it's like they're using a Ouija board, and they're like, hey, Ouija board, what should we fucking letters should we use? What combination of letters? Or they're just going to an online, like, acronym thing. Just, I don't know, who the fuck comes up, like, it's ridiculous. Anyway, so he's coming back from there He's been out of the kid's life. He's been, you know, he's not with his ex anymore, Cheryl Hines, who I think I might have mistakenly called his wife, is actually his ex-wife. And he goes to see her, and she's living with her new fiance, who is a psychologist played by Tim Meadows. Now, is Tim Meadows the most underrated comedic actor out there? Because when he does anything, even if the material is shitty like it was here, I think he's fucking hilarious. I laugh at the way he delivers everything. He kept delivering lines here about being emasculated because, hey, he's a psychologist, so he knows what emasculation is. Like, that's fucking clever and funny. But his delivery was hilarious, and it very much reminded me of the delivery he had in Mean Girls, which I think he's one of the best parts of Mean Girls. Just the way he was beaten down and, like, the patter of his delivery. I don't know. I think he's extremely underrated. So now Fox has Andre Brower and Tim Meadows, who, let's just get Tim Meadows off of Son of Zorn, and let's have him play like Andre Brower's brother or cousin or friend or something like that. Because I think that would be a hilarious comedic combination. And, you know, while I'm talking about black actors, let's talk about Chadwick Boseman. For those of you who don't know who he is, he plays Black Panther in Marvel Civil War, and of course he has his own movie coming out. And that's the first question I have. Does anyone give a shit about his movie that's coming out? I mean, I'm to the point that you guys know I'm so oversaturated with Marvel that I don't give a shit. So I don't see how anyone could give a shit, but there must be some excitement out there for him because people are interviewing him. He recently did an interview talking about the problems with Batman versus Superman, as if, you know, he was behind the scenes with it. He basically said that when he watched it, he could tell that there were essentially, he didn't use this metaphor, but I am, there were too many cooks in the kitchen, which, I mean, I guess you can kind of understand because we talked about the difference between the theatrical cut and the Ultimate Edition and how you could tell the theatrical cut was with lacking transitions and that the studio wanted a shorter runtime. So I guess I get where he's coming from there. But the thing I want to talk about, I don't really give a shit about that. Dumping on Batman versus Superman and Zack Snyder and Suicide Squad and Man of Steel and anything like that, DC nowadays, is just like, it's so passe to me. Everyone does it. So it's just sort of like, whatever, I don't care anymore. Like, everyone's got opinion. I mean, even Mel Gibson said Batman versus Superman was a mess. Although that was, again, that was a media headline that was twisted. He was using Batman versus Superman as an example of all superhero action movies being shitty and being a waste of time. And people made it seem like he was only talking about Batman versus Superman. No, Mel Gibson was using that as an example, as the exemplar of everything else, of all other superhero action movies. Hold on a second. I'm going to pause here for a second. I'm going to get a phone call. Be right back. All right, I'm back. So that was a phone call from my mother, from my mom. And I learned a couple things. The first thing is, she could not view the handwriting text I sent to her. And she has an iPhone. She has an older iPhone. Actually, I don't know if the phone's old, but the iOS is old because she doesn't update. So that, you know, that confirms my theory that Apple is creating all these things to make it so everyone feels like they want to have the iPhone because they want those capabilities. Makes sense from a marketing standpoint, marketing perspective. And the second thing is, Jimmy Garoppolo's injury is apparently an AC joint or an AC injury. I don't know what that stands for, but it's a shoulder thing. My mom is a nurse and an office manager for a doctor who does sports medicine and operates on knees and shoulders. Apparently, he hates this injury because it's a tough injury to work on, but apparently it will have no long-term effects on Jimmy Garoppolo. People were actually saying he's not going to play Thursday, but he could play against the Bills. The good thing, though, is regardless of if he plays for the Patriots ever again, he got his two-game audition in, and it looks like he didn't lose his millions of dollars because it's just an issue of pain management until he recovers 100%, and then his arm is completely fine. I specifically asked my mom if this would hurt his ability to throw at all, and she said no. So we can all rest assured, you know, it sucks for Jimmy. He doesn't get a four-game audition, but he had a great two-game audition. Well, he had a great one game and then a quarter and a few minutes audition. He'll get his millions of dollars at some point. Maybe it helps the Patriots because he only played a little bit, and people could say, well, is it a system thing? We don't know if he's worth that much. But with the amount of money people like Brock Osweiler were paid, I think Jimmy will get his payday. So he's all right. At the very least, it looks like we're probably going to go 3-1. I bet you anything, we'll probably see him against Buffalo if he's all right. Although there is the issue of managing future versus short term. But if it's pain management and he can manage the pain, just shoot him up with some painkillers that are legal. I'm not advocating anything illegal. He'll play that game and we'll beat the Bills. And then we'll be 3-1 into Brady coming back. It's ironic that we didn't lose to the Cardinals and we're going to lose to the Texans probably. Although I said we were going to lose to the Cardinals. So who knows what happens with the Texans. So good news, bad news, bad news, good news. Jimmy G's hurt, out for a couple weeks. Good news for him and, you know, for anyone who doesn't want to see somebody get his career destroyed. Not a big deal of an injury for him in the long run. He's going to be all right. He's going to make his millions. But what I was talking about before the phone call was Chadwick Boseman, whatever the fuck you say his name. And his comments, not on Batman vs. Superman, but Black Panther. He said that Black Panther, as compared to other comic book movies, is going to be a darker drama. Now, he couched this in talking about how the character doesn't have very much humor or anything. There's two things I want to talk about here. First of all, not having as much humor and being a darker drama, isn't that what people said is wrong with Snyder's movies? What's wrong with Batman vs. Superman? And now he's going out there and saying that's what they want to do with Black Panther and they're going to do with Black Panther? Has anyone called him out on that? If not, I'm calling him out on that right now. Or are people embracing him? I'd really like to know the reaction to that. That'd be interesting to see. But the second thing is, can you fucking imagine if a white person said that Black Panther was going to be a darker drama? Like, can you imagine the fucking controversy there would be if someone said that? Like, it would just be the end-all and be-all. And speaking of which, that reminds me, when we're talking about this race issue type stuff, a bunch of fucking dolphins kneeled before the game during the national anthem. And I don't know what's going to happen in Philly, but apparently they have some sort of fucking protest planned for the national anthem. Now, when Seattle said they were going to do a demonstration, I was like, well, of course Seattle would do a fucking protest. You know, one of the most liberal cities in America. They were the ones who were going to get away from it. And I was worried because it would legitimize the whole Black Lives Matter movement. You know, this makes it beyond the internet, beyond some nutcases. But of course, doesn't it make sense that it would be Philly, the city that booed Santa Claus, who would buy into this shit the most and have their NFL franchise do this? Look, here's the thing that's the most distressing to me about all of this. We debunked this on the podcast. Go back and listen to the episode. I don't remember what episode it was, but go back and listen to it. The statistics do not back up that black people are targeted more by the police than any other race. If anything, the statistics prove that the race is most targeted in relation to the percentage of the population they are is Hispanics. If you look at the population distribution, it said that a higher percentage of them than they are a percentage of the population was, you know, were the victims of violence, police violence. But it wasn't even that significant of a difference. Yes, any difference is significant. Any life is significant. The point is, this whole movement has taken a hold of our cultural consciousness, has become an issue in the NFL, and it's based on bullshit. It's not based on reality. And we're just not calling things equally. I mean, that's why I'm bringing up this thing about the Black Panther guy, Chadwick Boseman, or the fuck you say his name. Like, seriously, if a white fucking person said that, a darker drama, people would be like, watch your fucking words, dude. Like, pick your words better. But no one's even said a word. No one's even called him out and be like, that was a poor choice of words. You know, I can understand not accusing him of racism, but just being like, dude, poor choice of words. Like, imagine if a white person said that, they would be called racist even if they weren't. But what do I know? Especially when we're talking about black and white issues, I know nothing, because this week it came out that on December 6th, Mad Max Fury Road is getting a black and white release. This is a callback, of course, that other Mad Max movies are released in black and white. But the question I have is, and I actually had this in a conversation with Abe, the producer of Master Debaters that I went on and did that episode about objectivism and Zack Snyder and Can a Superhero Be Objectivist, their YouTube debate show. And he said, you know, how is this movie that popular that they can re-release it on DVD and this is a big deal? And that's what I don't understand. I saw the movie. Look, I didn't hate it. It was enjoyable to watch. It was enjoyable action. It was visually engaging. But isn't that everything people say is wrong with Snyder movies? But then you see the way people talk about this movie, and they talk about it like they're trying really hard to find themes and meaning behind this. Whereas with, you know, Snyder movies, they just dismiss them and say there is no meaning. Whereas here, they're doing all sorts of like somersaults or gymnastics to try and make this fit and make it work. I mean, calling it a feminist movie? Like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, besides Furiosa, who even that is a shallow character. I mean, all the characters in that movie are very shallowly drawn. Besides her, Charlize Theron's character, all of the other women are one note and minor characters. Those five princesses that have to be saved? Like, are you fucking kidding me? Saving five princesses, not just one? Like, talk about damsel in distress. Did it pass the Bechdel test? I don't even know. Like, do we take the Bechdel test seriously anymore? Whatever. The point is, how is this movie fucking popular enough that it's getting a black and white release? But around the time of the release, I want you guys to look for another episode of another edition of A Midside Moment. I'm actually going to do a much more in-depth and evidence-based argument for what I'm talking about here, where I'm going to compare Fury Road to Sucker Punch, and I'm going to prove that all the critiques of Sucker Punch actually apply to Fury Road. That's a topic that was actually one of my main inspirations for doing the vlogs, for doing the Midside Moments, because that's something I feel strongly about and I think is important to say. So I actually originally planned it as my first one, but I decided I need an introduction. So that's why I ended up with the one I did about the noise. And then now that the DVD is coming out, I'm actually going to push this back to even not be my second one anymore. So there will be one or two more before this one in December 6th. But, you know, I will release that eventually. It's a comparison of Sucker Punch and Fury Road and how, you know, kind of challenging the notion that Fury Road is this brilliant action movie and has all of this meaning and symbolism behind it. Likewise, where we're talking about analyzing and discussing the Batman vs. Superman Ultimate Edition Snyder Series episode will be coming in October. I'm going to be taking a trip. I'm going to be seeing both Daniel and Elliot. I'm going to be going to a Patriots game with Daniel once Brady has returned. And then I'm going to be spending a few days in Florida with Elliot. So I'm going to be doing a Midside tour. There'll be a lot of that on Snapchat if you follow me on there at the Midside. I might do a YouTube video with them as well. I don't know if it'll be a Midside Moment. It might be. It'll just be, I don't know. It's just something I'm toying with. But yeah, that week that I'm in there, so the 16th is the game I'm going to, the Bengals game. The week that I'm on the East Coast, that's the week we're going to be releasing the Batman vs. Superman Ultimate Edition. The same day that we usually release the podcast is going to be the Snyder series on Batman vs. Superman. So there's that to look forward to. There's normal episodes starting next week, unless everybody disappears again to go make money instead of, you know, doing this and donating their time, I suppose you could say. Although, that's an argument for Patreon. We'll get to that in a second. So there's the Batman vs. Superman to look forward to. There's the Midside Moment on Mad Max to look forward to. There's a normal episode to look forward to. And then, of course, the rest of the football season, all sorts of stuff like that. More content coming from us. But if you don't want this to ever happen again, if you enjoy the interplay between myself and Daniel, myself and Elliot, Daniel and Elliot, throw James in there, have our guests. If you enjoy that, make it so that it's more lucrative for them to do the podcast than not. And the way you can do that is Patreon. Patreon.com/TheMidSide. Help, well, mainly James keep the lights on, because James loves apparently keeping the lights on. Also, another way to really help us, if you don't tell a friend, is to just give us a 5-star review on iTunes. That's always super helpful. Maybe you can give a 5-star review and talk about how great this one person episode was, or talk shit about it and say, please, we need to make this even more popular so Justin never gets the balls to do anything so fucking stupid again. This is what I get for doing Snapchat. Like, Snapchat is what made me get this way, because I'll just do rants on Snapchat. Daniel's friend Dan, I don't know if he's a midsider or not, but Dan, who was at his wedding, mentioned at his wedding that he used to hate when I did those like long rants where I would talk in 10-second sound bites on Snapchat. Well, Dan, now I'm doing this. Hold on, someone's knocking on my door. All right, apparently my garage was open. I must have been so excited about the win and about recording this that the neighbor had to knock on my door and let me know the garage was open. I was actually super terrified it was the neighbor from downstairs complaining I was being too loud right now, because there's a little bit of controversy with that. But that is another story for another day. For now, I just want to say, I'm Justin M. Lesneski, and I can't remember my outro. Oh, I remember now. I'm Justin M. Lesneski, and I hope you learned something today. Thanks for stopping by the Midside, and remember, if things get tough out there, take a step back and witness the farce. And I'm pretty sure I said that all out of order, and I'm sorry, because there's no Elliot out here today to say, have a day. Did that suck? How was that outro? Was it bad?